all of the things that don't really need our brains, our understanding or empathy, these things we can leave to computers, but then we can actually place better focus on the things that we are good at.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests.
Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics.
You're listening and watching Edge of the Web.
Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com.
Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
All right, so hey, welcome back to Edge of the Web. This is episode 368. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks of Site Strategics. Every week, we bring you amazing guests from around the planet talking about digital marketing techniques and not only digital marketing, but also other spaces of conversion rate optimization, lead generation, as well as just tracking leads through the system. And this is what we're going to be talking about today. We unpack a key marketing effort, key marketing concept each and every show. And this show is actually for a lot of different types of career paths inside of digital marketing, whether or not you're a freelancer in digital marketing, a student just getting started, as well as part of a marketing agency or part of a marketing team for a corporation. This content is for you. We talk about so many different things, and you can go back through all of our episodes over the last 9 years that we've been talking. And I cannot think of anything that hasn't been an evergreen piece of content that we do here, except for like RHEL Author. RHEL Author has gone the way of the dodo, as well as Google Plus. Well, maybe there's a few things that we've talked about over the years that aren't around nowadays, but during that moment of time, it was still really, really valuable. So this show is what we produce each and every week from our studios here in Indianapolis, Indiana. You want to check out all the shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us a try. Here are the ropes of the show. Each and every week we record with our guests and kind of adjust the recording time so we can best meet their schedule. We'll then drop a video into multiple videos into YouTube, our news podcast, as well as our interview podcast. Each and every week we'll take the same audio and then roll it into the different podcasting platforms, iTunes and Google Play, obviously, but we'll move it into Stitcher and Player FM, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and the like. So if we're not where you like to listen to your podcast, let us know. Just drop us a line. We'll certainly get the RSS feed out there. We do that as well as crank out a lot of content off of this show each and every week, as well as distribute all the different key concepts into social media. So everything that we're doing on a regular basis is omni-channel, and that's what we do here at the studio for our clients as well. So with that, check out everything over at edgeofthewebradio.com. We've got the show, videos, audio, and news and transcripts that we're doing each and every show. Show is actually brought to you by Site Strategics. We're a Indianapolis-based digital marketing firm focused on the agile marketing principles. And if you want to know what that is, it's literally results-based steerage of digital marketing tactics that are oriented towards best conversion rates, best conversions, and ultimately tying into the lead value of the organizations that hire us to do that work. So we're always listening to how was that lead when it came down to revenue, not just we got X number of leads. We always try to have that relationship because that's what shows us the true return on investment for our efforts. So if you're interested in what we can do for you, simply give us a call at 877-SEO for web or 877-736-4932. There's the commercial, and I'm going to introduce you to the wild man behind the glass. That's Jacob, man. How you doing, sir?
The wild man?
You are the wild man.
Is this my new nickname?
I think so.
Right.
Yeah, you got to start growing your hair out again. But
okay.
Yeah, this week has been a bit of a this and last week were pretty challenging for the studio, and we just wanted to give our listeners a chance to understand what you do. You literally had like three quick changes in this studio one day alone. We had a Monday CEO who contacted us Friday to come in and do a Zoom broadcast out of the blue. And it wasn't enough that we got him on the, get him in the studio, but we also changed a custom backdrop, custom lighting, custom logos,
different microphones,
and different microphones. Yep, and different earpieces. So did that on the fly, and then we changed into servicing the National Guard. If I'm not mistaken, they came in that very same day and had an entire broadcast from the studio as well. And I think we did a third quick change in the studio as well. Right?
Yeah. And then now you and all this while nursing over 20 yellow jacket stings I got when I went home on Friday and thought I'd mow the grass and apparently had a little hole in the ground and mower got too close. So as I was mowing, they just all started stinging me. And thank God that thing has that seat that when you come off the seat, just shuts everything off because I went running, flapping everywhere, yelling at my kids to go inside after I just spent an hour trying to get them to come outside. I'm like, go inside, go inside.
Yep. So do you understand why I'm nicknaming you at least this week the Wild
I'll take
Man?
It.
All right.
I
so
like it.
He just bounced off his mower and the rest is buzzing around the internet. So there's
yes.
that.
There
okay.
We go.
All right. So we want to let you know who we're going to be talking to in the upcoming shows. We are going to be having Shay Rowbottom, the Shay Rowbottom. Happy to have her come back on the show. What an exciting, vibrant lady that is just killing it inside of LinkedIn. 500,000 followers on LinkedIn or some ungodly amount like that. And she is cranking out content all the time in that channel. So happy to have her on board. Shama Hyder from Zen Media is coming on the following week. Then we're going to have Will Critchlow as a return guest talking about the last 15 years in SEO. And that's going to be a walk down memory lane for a lot of us. And it certainly is some great information just to give you a perspective of where we've been in the last decade and a half. And we're also going to wrap up some advanced schema discussions with Dixon Jones, CEO of Inlinks, coming up mid-October as well. We also want you to check out the recent shows. We don't do enough kind of acknowledgement of who we just talked to. We had a great show with Tim Schmoyer, who just unpacked tactic after tactic about video optimization and how to curate a really good loyal audience inside of YouTube. So please check out that. We'll have some links in the show notes as well. Just tying back to some of the recent shows. John Mueller was on the show as well as great Gary Eish. And we also had Michael King recently of iPool Rank. So check out those shows. They're worthwhile going back and having a look-see. So if you're interested in being part of the show, just give us a shout over at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. And set your reminders for YouTube whenever we light up the video premieres inside there. Certainly would love to have some feedback. Tell us how we're doing on a regular basis. And if you're interested, give us a shout and drop us a review on iTunes and their respective platforms, because that's a great way to understand what you're looking for in our show. All right, so check out all the information over on Edge of the Web Radio, and make sure you check out the bonus newscast regarding news of the day in digital marketing that we have that's accompanying our interview today. So you'll have that in the show notes. Go look that up as well. So we took on some meaty topics here in the news. So that's all the housekeeping, and we appreciate our guests waiting patiently as we got through that mess. So let's meet this week's industry expert.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Jeroen Kortalik, co-founder and CEO of Salesflare.
All right, so Jeroen, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, happy to be here.
So this is not just a down the street call. Where are you hailing from today?
I'm based and calling from Antwerp in Belgium.
And it's about 5 o'clock there. We certainly appreciate you wrapping up your day with a call like this. What's happening in Antwerp? How's the weather in Antwerp today?
Today it's pretty good, but it's getting chillier. So it's 21 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's not the summer temperatures anymore, but still good weather.
Are you a fall person or a summer person?
Summer person.
Excellent. I don't think we're going to get along. I'm sorry. I just cut it off here. I'm eyeballing fall with just a bated breath because, you know, this summer has been, this spring and summer, all things considered, have not really been great at all. I just want to be able to change the channel and go into fall and winter and go to sleep and hopefully wake up on the other side of 2021. Anyway, let's tell our listeners about who you are. You're the co-founder and CEO of SalesFlare, and that's an intelligent CRM that for startups and small businesses that they love to use. Prior to SalesFlare, you were helping companies implement their new CRMs, marketing and sales, so you were also in the marketing space. The mission for SalesFlare is to automate everything in sales, but except for the irreplaceable human contact. SalesFlare actually gathers information from emails, email signatures, social profiles, and more. Everything automatically appears in your address book. So it's a great tool. Before we talk about the tool, give us your history and your words. How did you come to become the CEO of SalesFlare?
Well, previous to SalesFlare, I worked in a marketing consultancy, like you said. Mm-hmm. It was a marketing consultancy specifically for the pharmaceutical industry. And at that consultancy, we used Salesforce internally. Salesforce was like my very first CRM, so I personally took it very seriously. People told me that it would help me organize my sales. So I really tried using it for sales follow-up, but I just didn't manage to make it work for me. And I actually noticed it didn't really work for any of my sales colleagues either. Our CEO loved it for doing reporting, and he still does, I'm sure. But we, the salespeople, we didn't get much further than entering our sales opportunities in there. Mm-hmm. It just didn't help us selling. So it didn't make much sense for us to use it for more than management reporting.
Right.
And then I didn't do anything with that insight for a few years until I was working with my co-founder in another software company. It was in the business intelligence space. Mm-hmm. We had a ton of leads after a conference to follow up. And I knew that Salesforce wasn't going to help with that. So we had a good look around and we tested different CRMs. And where all these CRMs failed, however, time and time again, was with us. Not because the software didn't work.
Sure.
But we didn't manage to fill them out like we were expected to fill them out. We just don't have that discipline to be these sort of perfect data input robots. Mm-hmm. The software expected us to be these kind of robots, but we weren't. And we understood that most salespeople aren't. And that's actually when we figured that it doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. And that we could build a system that isn't dependent on us to do data input. And also a system that actually helps us to follow up and make more sales. So we figured that the things we and everyone else were inputting into our CRMs were basically information that was already available in other places. So like in your emails, mm-hmm. in your calendar, in your phone, in social media, company databases, this email tracking, web tracking.
Right.
And all we needed to do was surface that information, connect it automatically, and then offer it back to you in such a way that you can curate that information in just a few clicks. So that's when SalesFlare was born. It's an intelligence CRM that is built on top of existing data mm-hmm. and that organizes that data automatically. So you don't need to fill out the CRM manually. And it's also a CRM, like I said before, what Salesforce didn't really help you with following up customers. We find that really important. And actually, when we interview customers, it's the main reason they use Salesforce is to follow up leads or customers. Our system helps with that by keeping track of everything automatically, providing great overview, automatically reminding you whether a certain customer needs follow-up. Hmm. So our biggest mission when we started Salesforce was to help salespeople focus on their customers and follow them up perfectly
right.
with a very easy and automated system without spending any time on stupid robotic tasks. And that's still our biggest mission today.
That's excellent. And that goes to a huge problem in the CRM world. It's garbage in, garbage out, or lack of data creates lack of insight, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's one garbage in, garbage out, but then also for management,
right?
If salespeople are putting garbage in, then they cannot pull the metrics that they're looking for. So like I said, on a salesperson level, the end user, it's really to follow up leads and customers better,
right?
And that's something that sales management obviously find important as well, because they will make more revenue. But on the sales management level, it's also about that reporting. And the reporting gets so much better if salespeople actually use the CRM, because the data is actually there and you can pull all the reports you like. while it's very limited if salespeople only, for instance, put in their opportunities like I used to do.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other problem with Salesforce, and that actually created an entire cobble industry of consultants to help guide companies on how to use and customize Salesforce. So nothing besmirching Salesforce. It's a great tool, but there's this gap of modeling it towards your own company's profile of a business process that led to an entire consultancy realm. So
yeah, there's a huge industry around Salesforce. It's not just implementing,
right.
It's training. And recently I even found a guy that specializes in negotiating contracts with Salesforce. that even exists.
Oh my gosh. So it's Salesforce is a bit of a pretty penny when it comes down to per seat or per agent type of pricing as well. And again, it's valuable for that enterprise if they have those the level of need that Salesforce provides, but you have to have an incredible internal discipline for data input all the way through to be able to make this thing a valuable resource, right?
And I believe nobody has that discipline. You might have it at some point, but then some salespeople they start selling very well, right. And then they feel invincible. They're sort of on cloud number nine. Everything's going great.
Right.
And at that moment, you just stop filling out the CRM, and then the whole system falls apart. And it's quickly falls apart. It's not just if you let's say stop using it altogether. If you fill it out only for 70%, I think it already falls apart.
Yeah.
Because there's 30% data missing and it doesn't feel reliable anymore. You cannot find everything in there anymore. And then, it's not super useful.
No. And that's even if people are plugged into a platform like this. I actually, harking back to an experience I had with a client maybe 8 years ago. And it was a sizable trucking industry, multiple distribution centers, and they adopted Salesforce, and they couldn't get their older sales managers to jump in there and even look at the data that was coming through. So we had all the lead forms linked and piping hot leads basically into Salesforce, and they weren't even looking at it. So it was also, again, we talked about this earlier, is even the adoption of a CRM is tough for different industries. And if there's a resentment or a pushback in that space, my gosh, there's such a loss of opportunity. I think, honestly, as memory serves, they were not touching about, and this only went on for a little while, they weren't touching about 70% of the leads that we are actually generating in that space. It was terrible. It was literally worth millions. And there was just this lack of adaptation and lack of involvement in the CRM. So it's kind of dovetailed into what we're talking about here. You've got the human element that's at the core of this, and the human fallibility and the human bias and the human discipline of being that data reconnaissance cog, right?
Yeah, that's it. There's a few parts to this. Like you said, if end users don't buy into the system, that's a huge fail, because if they don't use it properly, then some leads might get lost. But then even if you, for instance, compare a Google Sheet, for instance, to a CRM. I interviewed some customers end of last year, and I remember one of them mentioning that by just switching from a simple sheet to Salesforce, they are earning a million more per year, and that's on follow up.
Wow.
It's not like you had an example of people not working on all leads. This was working on all leads, but not doing it properly. Not having the necessary sort of idea of what needed follow-up at what time.
Got it.
With all the information behind that.
And so also part of the CRM industry is the ability to score leads based on behavior, based on tracking tools. And so not to get deep in the channel here, but automatically sensing behavior, you have to have a good deal of business intelligence rules that are preset to be able to engage and understand behavior. You're not relying on cookies, are you, in this space? Are you doing something else that's actually a bit more unique and maybe intuitive?
in our case, so the tracking aspect is something we built out pretty early as well, because mm-hmm. imagine we were selling business intelligence software. This is a very, very slow industry, and people were not very responsive to our email. So for us, it was immediately important to see a sort of inside the black box, see where things were, whether people were opening our emails, clicking on them,
right.
What products they were looking at on our site. Some of the first things we built was actually that. So in Salesflare, when you send emails from Salesflare or you send them from Gmail or Outlook with our plugin,
mm-hmm.
then it will track whether emails are opened based on a little pixel in the email.
Sure.
It will replace the links of the emails you're sending with an identifiable link. It will place not a cookie, but a local storage thing mm-hmm. on the computer of the person, which is done in the same way when they go to the website, and these things are matched up. So that way, if anyone has been to your website at any time before or after they click on a link in an email, you can follow all that. We do lead scoring based on that. We keep it very simple for our users. So there's some thing built in that will score them as either room temperature, hot or on fire. You get notified when people like reach these levels, and you get notified when they click on stuff and go to the website and all as well.
Very good.
And you can filter on it as well if you want to work on your hottest leads first, and you filter on the hotter on fire ones, and you can start there.
Without seeing the software, I always am interested in on the lead gen side of things and the buyer's journey build out of content on a website, because that's exactly where you start defining the funnels. Does this have any opportunity to be able to give kind of an admin feedback based on the behavior it sees on the website? What are the hottest pages, and what are the funnel creators for different areas of content? Or do you have to actually put that into the model and designate that as this should be a hot topic entry point for this particular type of buyer? Do you have that type of profiling going on in the website?
You can definitely see where sort of leads had the first touch. I often see that with new customers, like they read this blog post and mm-hmm. then I went there, and then it took months, and then they read another blog post, and then they converted. But that's on the CRM and sales level. We right. don't build a Google Analytics, let's say.
Right.
That's not our thing. We help salespeople handle their customers and follow them up in a better way.
Very good. Yeah.
So if you want that other aspect that tracks more on a marketing level, then I would recommend using something like Google Analytics.
Yep. And that's something, actually, talking about, I've been listening to a number of your interviews, and you are forthcoming in to the degree that some other software may actually be a better fit based on certain needs that a customer provides you, and you're not trying to make this a serves-all type of platform, right?
No, I hate those old types of platforms.
Yep. Because usually... Like
these platforms that do everything but nothing at the same moment.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, in this space, I mean, you're a CRM in a sea of CRMs. What are the key differentiators that you provide? I mean, the automatic attribution model is and the behavior modeling is fantastic. To take that away from salespeople, that should be enough. what other differentiators do you have in comparing to a Salesforce or comparing to a HubSpot?
Yeah, well, the main differentiators are one on the automation of the data input. Mm-hmm. So there's no other CRMs out there that start from automated data inputs mm-hmm. and then allow you to do it manually as well. And most CRMs start from having manual data input and then maybe sync in some things left and right.
Right.
But we built it in such a way that you literally start with the data you already have, and from there you can build it up. And then secondly, the ease of use is something we spend a whole lot of time working on.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on G2.com, you'll see that we're currently ranked, I think, fifth of all CRMs in the world for ease of use.
Great.
And that's even when they give us some less on the other factors thing, they call it. We get a bit of a lower score. Otherwise, we would be even a bit higher. And then additionally, we're currently building more automation on top of that automated data input.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, for instance, that we released in April is a built-in email sequences tool. So, which we use for all kinds of purposes. You can use it to connect with partners. You can use it to reach out to potential customers. But you can also use it to sort of automated flows. When, for instance, I have one set up when people go to the site, and that's LeadWorks picks that up. Mm-hmm. LeadWorks pushes the company and a few contacts to Salesflare, and then they automatically start getting emails in Salesflare. Because you can go beyond one-off sort of email sequences and also do automated ones.
Very good. Very good. So, I mean, it also works with other tools and technologies to be able to do that level of ongoing reconnaissance, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's essential nowadays.
Well, I want to change topic a little bit and focus on building software with artificial intelligence. And mm-hmm. we're in the space of machine learning. And from a marketing standpoint, machine learning has been a fantastic boon to be able to offer up a lot of different types of content variations and have the machine actually bubble up what's most effective to the surface. There's also a bit of a, you know, I regularly joke that if you started investing in AI, I mean, literally AI, especially in the machine learning space, that's the advent of Skynet from Terminator. I mean, ultimately, it starts taking all of our decisions away from us. But, I mean, your software is uniquely poised to using AI to pull information for salespersons. Is your software primarily a efficiency model or a reconnaissance model? Let me ask you that real quick.
I have no idea what you mean with the difference between efficiency.
Yeah, so for efficiency, taking the salesperson out of data entry and actually removing that time commitment and focusing on following the lead as opposed to three quarters of their time actually plugging away on information, or is the model a behavioral feedback space for the salespeople to understand their consumers when they're ready to buy earlier on? Or is it a combined scenario here?
It's a bit of both. It definitely starts from the first part, being much more efficient into all the jobs that the salespeople need to do within the sales process. Right. And very much starting from that bottleneck, which is the data input into the CRM. But then it also tries to help salespeople with understanding their customers better, sending the right things at the right time, all this kind of stuff.
Very cool. All right. So let me ask you this. You've come from a marketing background, and you're also an engineer as well, which is also kind of interesting. How did you leverage that in building Salesflare?
Yeah. The marketing background, actually, that's a funny story. One of the reasons we named Salesflare, because we wanted to keep the focus on sales. We understood that there was already a lot of exciting marketing automation out there and marketing technology, but that salespeople were not really helped in that space. And we believed that we could make a difference there. But it was always easy to sort of move with our ideas towards the marketing space. And we decided very consciously to not do that and to keep focusing on sales. Mm-hmm. As the engineering part has come in handy for me, I'm actually a biomedical engineer by education.
Oh, wow.
Electrotechnical biomedical. And I spent my time working on things like signal analysis. So it's let's say, data analysis, but then on one-dimensional signals. And I also did some image recognition stuff. So that's more the two-dimensional and three-dimensional data stuff. That really helps me in thinking about how to handle data, how to recognize patterns. Mm-hmm. I did courses like databases and all that. And that's handy now when it comes to bridging the gap between sales and marketing,
right,
and the technical part. So I can actually have discussions with our development team that go beyond the software should do this or that.
You know? Very good. Well, I mean, I think you're kind of uniquely poised with that type of background to be able to do something like this. And it seems like a natural evolution, so to speak, of moving into Salesflare. Got a question for you regarding kind of the risk of automation. Kind of dovetailed mm-hmm. with the AI machine learning side of things. We are, as a society, growing more and more. There's a larger and larger percentage of us that are digital natives, right? And that's the millennial generation and earlier. I mean, my children literally know their way around any type of OS or any type of interface naturally. So they're now more naturally wired, forgive the pun, to understand this space and also be able to sniff out disingenuous or automatic type of treatment of commercials, marketing, communication across the board, right? And they can sniff out a poorly executed ad very, very easily. And from a brand standpoint, that's the incredible detriment if it's not well thought through. And even from a automated process, you still have to have the investment of the human element and understand the psychology of that user, right? When it comes down to automated communication, there's always that risk. How can you, and maybe this is more a philosophical point than anything else, how can we continue to inject the human aspect, the human insight, the human perspective into the automated process and not kind of lose our marketing souls or not lose our sales souls in the process, right?
Yeah, there's a few things. What I personally always like to do when automating things is doing it manually first and before doing things at scale, doing it one by one. So really try to connect with people one by one, understand what it is they're looking for, understand what are the sensitive things and all those kind of things, and sort of build up that experience to then afterwards be able to properly automate it. I think that's very important because otherwise you immediately lose touch a bit. People don't think deeply enough about who's on the other side of like two screens away from
them. Exactly.
And they start automating things in ways that absolutely make no sense, that if they would receive it, they would be like, oh, what's this? Then towards automation, what is important as well is that I think we keep focusing, and especially as salespeople and maybe marketing people by extension, on the things that are inherently human. That we could keep focusing our time there, and that we actually use the automation to take all the other things away. So take away the data input, take away part of the scheduling, maybe some follow-up emails here and there, like simple stuff. All of the things that don't really need our brains, our understanding or empathy, these things we can leave to computers. But then we can actually place better focus on the things that we are good at. So the conversations, plus the computers will be able to tell us much more about the customer,
right,
without us having to do a ton of research, keep everything perfectly, you know, all these kind of things. Computers can do that part for us, inform us better, make sure that at the moments that we are talking to people, we do a better job. That's more the world that I believe in, and that's in sales, but it even goes into fields like accounting or so.
Sure.
Like accountants who still have to take a document, type over the lines, you know, of the invoice into the accounting software. That's a huge loss. They can leave that to software, just check what the software has done, and then advise the client on how to do better with their accounting and their taxes and all those kind of things.
Yep. No, I would agree with that. It's the, you are assuming, however, that with all the unnecessary things pulled aside, that the salesperson will invest in that human relationship. And there is another evolution of this from a sales standpoint. If they're not putting themselves into the communication, if they're actually allowing just automation to take hold, then you're also going to be able to show that salesperson's lack of aptitude in true customer relationship. So along with it, if you take all of the potential obfuscation away of data entry, then you can also kind of shine a light on inefficiencies, or I should say ineptitude in the sales process at those individuals. They have to know that this is a relationship building type of scenario, as opposed to just run the scripts and everything is going to flow through the funnel correctly. Not to really put a negative spin on salespeople, but I do know some lazy salespeople, and if you give them plenty of tools to not do their job, they're going to clamor into it and just sit back and what have you. Boy, I just went negative there, didn't I?
Yeah. No, I think to look at it positively, sales automation is very new. A lot of people don't really know how to go about it yet. There's so many things coming, and obviously some salespeople might take it the lazy way, but the ones who want to make results are going to start using it the right way, automate parts away so that you can spend more time with customers, spend more time with more customers actually as well.
Yep.
And be better at it. You can actually do many more personal relationships at scale if you use it properly.
Very good. Very good. So, appreciate you following me down that particular hole, but I mean, there is an essence of automation and kind of the, you know, potential risk of dehumanizing these things, and I certainly do appreciate your thoughts in that matter. I do think we're in this next new evolution of knowing what's automated, knowing what's real, and you know the society at large knows that technology helps us, but at the same time, we're in a space right now where we've broken connection. This entire COVID mess has reduced us to screen interactions and not being in the same room to be able to communicate and read body language. So part of this is trying to find areas where we can communicate. And society, the digital commerce society, by and large, has no time for something that doesn't have a personalized touch to it. So another section I wanted to get in here with you is really remote selling during COVID. Mm-hmm. And you just recently actually ran a webcast regarding some key topics on this particular issue. I mean, the pandemic has obviously had a huge impact on sales across the board for companies. All sales are going remote, and for the most part, and I mean, salespeople still have to generate leads. So can you give us some thoughts that you've had on the matter of, as we move into the remote selling disciplines, what are some key things to pay attention to improve your relationship whenever you're talking to that screen?
Yeah, indeed, there's a big potential in remote selling. We've known that potential and known as inside sales for quite a while, mm-hmm. especially in SaaS where we are, software as a service. Inside sales is very, very popular. Mm-hmm. So basically, people selling from their desk, not leaving and jumping in the car. Now they instead of maybe 4 or 5 meetings a day, if they're really efficient driving around, you can do tens of meetings in a day. A bit of the downside of it is that you lose part of that personal connection.
Right.
Like you're not with people in the same room anymore. Like you said, part of the body language goes lost. Maybe the sound doesn't properly get through and some of the tone of voice get lost and all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. So what's really important there is to try to compensate for that, to be sort of as personable as possible. The good thing is that there is more room for that as well. Mm-hmm. In the normal setting, people like it to be much more formal. But as soon as you start video calling, like I normally wear a shirt when I go to meetings. Now I'm wearing a t-shirt, and that's fully acceptable.
I am so glad you said that and completed the sentence there.
Excuse me?
So I normally wear a shirt, but now I'm wearing a kilt. Sorry.
Yeah.
No.
I was actually on a podcast called Working Without Pants, but that's a whole other level.
I think that should be adopted by everybody. Above the fold is fine, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, to your point, not to interrupt you, but it's about the casualness, the removing of some of the formality that we're all in this together concept, right? So keep on going.
Yeah, it's indeed we're all in this together. It's totally acceptable to not be as formal, to sometimes have your kid walk up to you or the dog is barking, yep. or whatever. I always advise people, especially in the beginning, to turn on video calling. It makes it as live as possible. Maybe invest in a decent webcam, and mine is not awesome, as you can see, but it's okay. A decent microphone as well.
Sure.
So you can get this as close as possible to the normal experience. In between calls, use chat as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Emails are very easy to ignore, and they still have a bit more of that formal aspect to it, which creates a big distance between you and your prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And that prospect you've seen them once on a video call, but then keeping that momentum through email is hard.
Right.
I try to get prospects WhatsApp, on LinkedIn, and we use live chat in our site and our app as well,
mm-hmm.
because that creates much, much more of a connection. You can actually have conversations instead of the sort of ping pong that you have with emailing.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's another level of intimacy that you're imposing on that particular prospect. You know, there's always been this barrier of I'll communicate with sales when I'm ready, but having a WhatsApp connection or instant messaging inside of Facebook, these things are now that you and you can also see when things have been read. Now you have this much more instantaneous level of expectation too that has to be agreed upon by both parties, right?
Yeah, definitely. But people get much more used to it, especially through LinkedIn. You can almost not do it.
Right.
I connect with every person who starts a sales for a trial, at least if it works out through LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
Which creates a direct connection. I don't start selling to them or something, but I try to be helpful to them.
Mm-hmm.
Say, at least you can contact me here if you like. Do you have any feedback? You know, these kind of things.
I'd be interested in seeing, as a sidebar, interesting in seeing the stats on instant messaging as soon as COVID came through and, inside of LinkedIn, and how much more activity has happened in that platform alone. Because you're absolutely right, mm-hmm. that's the business conduit, and there's an expected type of communication that can be there inside of LinkedIn, as opposed to hunting somebody down on Facebook in your sales opportunity. That's the wrong space to be. You know, I'm looking at family vacation
it
pictures.
It can work.
Yeah.
It can work on Facebook, but it depends very much. Especially, like, for instance, we're in some communities, mm-hmm. with a lot of SaaS products and digital marketers.
Right.
And there it's totally okay to start connecting with people. Yeah, of course, there's people reaching out to others as well to try selling, and that's probably not a good idea, not on Facebook and not on LinkedIn. But building these relationships is perfectly okay there, I think.
How about TikTok? Let's use TikTok to be able to generate some business. No? No?
No. Well, not for us.
Seems like not for anybody now these days. Interesting part of your presentation the other day, you tripped across something somewhat intentionally, but it actually really triggered my marketing ears on this, is that instead of actually networking, right, you mm-hmm. gave alternative options to be able to connect and communicate and demonstrate authority. And you talked about recommending answering questions inside of Quora or Reddit or Product Hunt. That's a fantastic space to be in, not just for sales, but it's highly recommended for building marketing authority, because, I mean, you can create loyalists in that marketplace if you or your subject matter experts inside of your organization are actually communicating the benefits of said product or service and actually answering a good deal more in-depth questions. It's almost a customer service space as well. So part of the drift or the adaptation to this distance type of remote relationship is also kind of channeling sales individuals into be able to be much more multidimensional when it comes down to content that they can put out, and they can truly assist the marketing efforts as well, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we got a lot of value from, apart from the things you mentioned, was Facebook groups as well.
Yeah.
They're great for networking, especially the Facebook groups that are very dedicated to a specific type of people, like people in SaaS, salespeople, people in digital marketing in a specific space or something. You can have really great discussions, teach each other all kinds of stuff, maybe share some piece of content you're working on, not linked to your blog or something, that's usually not allowed, but take it more from a collaboration and discussion perspective. Can be great ways of networking. Actually, what we're doing right now, a podcast, is an amazing way of networking as well.
Yep.
You with your guests. So for instance, let's say you're selling a garbage disposal and you want to connect with other people in that area, you could just start a podcast about it. In this case, it might not sound super sexy, but I'm sure that there's people in that space that would like to know all about
it. Absolutely. We are in a fractionalized consumer base, bar none. And there's a podcast for everybody, right?
Yeah. And you just start one up. You start reaching out to people. You're like, would you like to be on my podcast? That's people often that you normally wouldn't be able to reach out to otherwise. You get them on the podcast, you have a little chat before and after. This is great. But then there's also the relationship that you're building with the people that are listening to the podcast, which is really nice as well. So I definitely recommend that as well. As long as the podcast sphere is still building up and still as fragmented as it is today, without big players that take away all the attention, it's an amazing space to be in.
And it leads a very unique and authentic digital wake if in fact you're doing it the correct way. You can't fictionalize, you can't fabricate a conversation. You got to be able to have that authentic tone as much as possible. So those are all good spaces to be able to move into, and some of those require some investment of time and resources, obviously, from a firm, but we are adept at adapting in this space, and there's certainly users have their own kind of digital consumption fingerprint. They want to listen to more podcasts as opposed to videos, or they want to conduct more contact on social as opposed to email. I mean, if you're delivering in that omni-channel space, right, to their preference, then now you have a heck of a lot. It's kind of almost like, what's their formula? What's their potential or prospective best method of communication? You find that, and then you can actually be able to use that for that relationship build.
Yeah, but the nice thing here is that you can actually repurpose it. Like what we're doing today is a video.
Yep.
Broadcasting this live or not. It can be live. It can be an archived video afterwards. You can turn it into a podcast. You could take a transcript and throw it on the blog. You can make snippets of it with nice things you want to pick out for the audience that are quick things to sort of consume on social media. If they want to know more, they can pick whatever they want. Do they want to watch the YouTube video? Do they want to listen it on Spotify? They want to actually listen on Google Podcast because they like that. They want to read it on the blog. It's all possible. And the nice thing about doing podcasts as well is you can get, like you're doing, you can get topic experts talking, which you'd normally never get to contribute.
Right.
Because writing a guest blog, for instance, takes a lot of time. Here is just a chat. And additionally, the reason why I like listening to podcasts, before I stop, the whole podcasts are amazing, I think, is the conversations are much more real as well. I often feel like if you're reading a blog post, that it's very fabricated, like you said, while it gets pretty real in podcast, people just have a conversation, they dare to go a bit further, you know.
Yeah,
it's nice.
You really can't BS that space. You can't spin it. You got to be able to have, you know, a forthright conversation and know what you're talking about too, right?
Yeah, you can learn so much from podcasts often.
Absolutely. Like, you know, last thing on the selling remote, and I have one more place to go in our conversation. I really do appreciate the time, is just getting a recording feedback for salespeople that record a Zoom or any other conferences. Do you recommend them actually watching and replaying their sales techniques and be able to kind of scrutinize and review their performance, their tone, I mean, we're all in a different space now, and people are not yet accustomed to being calm and controlling their delivery. I would expect that it's a great process to be able to give feedback and improve one's delivery. Yes?
Definitely. I wouldn't necessarily overdo it, but yeah, listening to it a few times and seeing where you can improve, that's how good salespeople become great salespeople. But it also opens up an opportunity for sales management to actually be able to coach. Like back in the day where sales managers would go with their sales reps on the road and see how they're doing. And then when they're in the car, give some advice. Now this can happen while they're not there. You just get the recording, check it out. There's platforms out there that even will indicate specific spots in the chat, will analyze it and all. It's really great coaching material.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's also sentiment analysis software that can actually read tone. I mean, it's usually used in customer service type of tracking, but yeah, you could also do that. All right, so enough of that. Last thing I wanted to bring around is really kind of a recognition of what you guys are doing over Sales Flare regarding your own marketing. And I tripped across this, and I said, okay, got to bring this around and talk about this for a second here. So ran our own analysis tools on what your content's doing, and lo and behold, and I'll ask Jacob to throw this up on screen real quick. You've got top ranking on terms. If you go to that search page here, top sales podcasts, just Google top sales podcasts, and you're going to see the Sales Flare blog post right there at the top of the list. You also have a podcast, which is fantastic. But all of a sudden now I'm seeing another dimension of what you guys are doing. You've got a number of blog pages out there, and on top of that, they're really ranking well. Even best sales books read by Elon Musk, or more importantly, that you think are actually read by Elon Musk. That's ranking number one. You're actually ranking above Amazon in those Google searches. So when did you start this marketing effort, and what are you doing regularly to be able to keep that fire stoked? Because those pages are ranking phenomenally well.
I think we started beginning of 2017, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I stayed away for a very long time from blogging. Mm-hmm. As we were starting up Salesflare, I felt like it was much more useful to spend time on sales and product than it was on trying to scale marketing or something. And blogging just takes away a lot of time.
Right.
But as we grew, we needed to start scaling and make connections apart from trying to do outreach and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So initially, we took content marketing very much as something where we would create a bit of hype.
Right.
So create very interesting pieces of content, long playbooks, to get people excited about all kinds of topics. That's our initial content marketing efforts. Mm-hmm. This shifted over time into more of a focus on SEO. There was a time when we focused on anything sort of that was interesting to our audience. That's, for instance, the startup podcast post was written in that period.
Right.
We just focused on things where we knew there was traffic from our audience, and we could get views. This is content now that gets the most reads, but it's not necessarily content that has the most business value for us and brings the most leads. That's something we started focusing on after that. We started writing much more about topics that are directly related to our software, in which we can sort of showcase sales for along the way. For instance,
Your entire how-to subdomain, right? It's a much more oriented, the content's much more oriented to your product as well as other products, not so much products, but other challenges that people have, like syncing email. That's one of the top terms that are actually ranking in that space. And actually, Jake, if you throw up that rich snippet graph over at SEMrush, is if you scroll through there, there's a lot of really, again, like 32 rich snippets on your content, number of things regarding to more general terms of email syncing and the like. So, I mean, kudos to you for what's happening on the how-to subdomain. But you got two different initiatives there. You got the blog content, the how-to, as well as I think you also have even a integration.cloudflare.com subdomain there, right?
Yeah, Yeah, Salesflare, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, that's also an SEO experiment we did, trying to rank CRM integrating with something.
Yeah.
It's only partly working, I would say. It's not our biggest success. The how-to one was not at all an SEO play.
Mm-hmm.
We just wrote a lot of how-to articles and they started ranking.
Yep.
It's more on the blog where we focus on it.
Well, you're certainly getting some rich snippets and featured snippets inside of Google ranking. And that kind of leans into just answering questions. So I'm assuming you've got a plethora of schema type behind the scenes and doing your best SEO techniques to be able to get that ranking. Or did you lock into this position?
No schema whatsoever.
Oh, my gosh. That's even better. All right.
It's Google picking up these things by itself. So I think last week, for instance, we talked about remote selling earlier.
Yep.
We used to rank number one on remote selling with a snippet.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that today it's not the case, but it might be the case again tomorrow or next week. Very or whatever. Cool. That's just because we write about topics that people are looking for a lot.
Right.
We write it all with search intent in mind. And then from there, we try to build it up in such a way that it's actually interesting and actually adds value, as opposed to many of the posts that are written by copywriters who read the posts of other copywriters. We try to have stuff that is actually written by people who know what they're writing about.
Yep.
And make a difference there. And along the way, sort of show Salesforce as well, so that we get some good leads, that people see our product in action and they might get interested in using our product.
Yeah. But it's not a hard push at all. You're doing,
no.
It's a soft sell on that side. Well, I just wanted to finish up with that because every once in a while, I love to be able to have a look at what's happening with some of our guests' websites. And I was pretty amazed at some of the content that was bubbling up to the surface. So kudos to what you're doing over there. And we certainly, for any of our digital marketers, have a look at that blog content and the rankings on some of those. It's pretty darn cool. So wrapping up, I certainly appreciate your time. We ask this of all of our guests, and we just love to be able to give you an opportunity to tell us what kind of grinds your gears, so to speak. What bugs you about your industry right now?
Sales automation, the way people are handling it right now,
mm-hmm.
is just terribly annoying. I get myself, I don't count, but a lot of cold emails a day and a lot of LinkedIn outreach, and it's just not cool.
Oh, the LinkedIn outreach is just terrible.
And the sales follow-up is a very old issue, but it's
right.
It's not very nice either. You want to buy something. You get in touch with people, you explain them everything and all that.
Yep.
And you have to go after them yourself. Well, you would expect that salespeople come after you and try to help you buy. They don't.
So. No. Well, conversely, what excites you about your industry right now that you're in?
The amount of data, especially with everything going more digital.
Mm-hmm.
We have a huge shock of everything going remote and becoming more digital. There's huge potential to do more with that data and to make it all work out, to get it organized, and to build proper automation on top of all of it.
Very good. Very good. And I think your favorite tool there is Zapier, and we certainly appreciate that. Who knew that bridge tool would be so valuable, just talking to different platforms and having different API connections? That's a cobble industry right there.
Definitely.
So, Jeroen, any final thoughts for our digital marketers? This is the digital marketing podcast, but at the same time, there's such a close relationship to sales now. They have to cross-pollinate. So what would be some recommendation that you'd have to make sure that they're maybe even attributed correctly? What would be a good pro thought for you?
That's a good question. But when you're talking about marketing and sales,
yep.
Sort of getting together, an interesting thought might be to see salespeople as sort of like all individual digital marketers and give them the necessary tools, the necessary content and all that. They won't necessarily create it themselves.
Sure.
But if you give them all these things so they can do what we were talking about, like connect on LinkedIn, seem interesting to their prospects and all those kind of things, build relationships. aided by digital marketing, I think that would be a big step.
Very good. Very good. Well, is there anything that we can promote for you on the show? I know we did a lot of deep diving with the software perspective as well, but anything in particular that we can lift up for you today?
Salesflare. You can find Salesflare at salesflare.com.
Very good.
And if you want to have a trial, it's free. No credit cards. You can see the software in action.
Excellent.
It's anywhere between 7 and 30 days because we have a trial that gives you more days as you set up the software to reward you for that.
Very good. Very good. So we certainly would implore our guests, our listeners, I should say, to go check out Salesflare.com, a free service right now that you can try out from a trial standpoint. Have a look at it, and you might want to nudge your sales team to have a look at it as well. Be sure to check out all the trending news that we did with Yoron in the bonus news podcast episode. But Yoron, any final thoughts for our digital marketing audience?
No, not really. I think we had them all.
Excellent. All the thoughts. We got all the thoughts. All right. So make sure that you follow Yoron over at Twitter on Yoron Courtauld. That's Courtauld on Facebook as well, /Salesflare. And LinkedIn, you can track him down there as well. So good branding on that space. Thank you so much for your time today, Yoron. It has been a pleasure, and I appreciate the amount of time you spent as we unpacked this conversation.
Yep, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome. All right, so don't forget to like and subscribe to Edge of the Web on YouTube. So whenever these YouTube videos get premiered, that you get pinged and you can check them out. We're also obviously putting out the news broadcast on a regular basis. We're also going to be doing some another different experiments on some quick takeaways for your snackable pleasure. So check that out. Be sure to see all the must-see videos. Subscribe to the podcast if you're a YouTube watcher. Jump on over to the podcast channel so you can get that regularly delivered to you. On top of that, hey, I fail to mention regularly, we have a newsletter coming out all the time talking about who we've interviewed and what the news items were of the day. Subscribe there. It's a free newsletter, obviously. We're just sending you nuggets of digital gold from the podcast. Happy to change up and change content based on your feedback as well. So let us know how we're doing on that front as well. So from all of us over at Edge, stay safe, stay well. Don't be a piece of cyber driftwood. We're going to be talking to Shay Rowbottom next week, so you certainly want to jump in to that show. It's going to be pretty darn exciting, I guarantee it. All right, so from all of us over at Site and Edge, be good and take care of yourself. All right, bye-bye.